Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Atlanta Business Radio. This is a special episode we do here from time to time in our Sandy Springs Business Radio X studio. This is a special episode featuring the Georgia Society of CPAs and their most coveted guests. Here's your hosts today, Joel Pascanner and John Masters. Welcome to the studio, gentlemen.
Good evening, or morning.
Hi.
Where are we?
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So who'd you bring with you today?
Well, I'll tell you who we brought. I just wanted to put a little plug in because we're here.
That's
really
right.
At the on behalf of the Georgia Society of CPAs, whose mission is to achieve excellence in the practice of accounting in all forms. And we achieve that excellence by providing superior advocacy, leadership, service, lifelong learning, and personal and professional development opportunities. And we've been doing these presentations here for the last couple of years periodically. And we are honored today to have the commissioner of the Georgia Department of Revenue, Lynn Riley. And she's going to be our guest today. I'm going to give a very brief bio because I'm actually looking at this right now as we speak. I know that she was appointed in January of 2015. And I know, I think prior to that, she was with the Georgia General Assembly. She served approximately 4 years as a representative to House District 50 in Johns Creek. She's had various other appointments prior to that. She also has, and I think she had, an accounting practice as well, Riley Accounting Services, and was instrumental in the principal of that for 20 to 30 years, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, Lynn, you can correct me on any of that and add to that if you wish, but I'm going to turn it over to you and you can sort of set the agenda and we'll interrupt you with questions as we go along.
Thank you very much, Joel, and thank you for the opportunity to be with everyone today. We at the Department of Revenue, our mission is to serve the taxpayers of Georgia efficiently and equitably, make sure that all laws of the state are abided by all taxpayers, and to provide the highest quality of customer service to each taxpayer every time we're asked to do so. There's a lot going on in the Department of Revenue and a lot of things that I'd like to share during our time together today. Primarily, I'd like to talk about the challenges that we have in identity theft and taxpayer fraud.
Oh, boy.
You know, I was going to mention to you, I just got, John, maybe you got this too, yesterday. Did you see this? This is the most recent edition of the Georgia Society CPA's publication, Current Accounts. You may have seen this on the newsstand. I'm kidding around. It's not on the newsstand.
It's a bestseller.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hot publication.
I've seen that.
But the cover says Georgia Department of Revenue takes on taxpayer ID theft. Have you seen that?
I have not, but I'm delighted that it's being spotlighted.
It's a cover story. It has quotes, and it mentions you, and I think you're probably going to talk about some of this.
Well, we found, along with the peer states that we have across the nation and the Internal Revenue Service, that the criminals have found a new target, and that is revenue services. They have figured out that they can sit behind a computer keyboard and file fraudulent returns and, you know, try to beat the odds that they won't be identified and get somebody else's money that would compromise all of the rest of the taxpayers in a jurisdiction. We've heard that the IRS has admitted to billions of dollars in fraud that have occurred over the years, and the Department of Revenue here in the state of Georgia is going to do everything within their power to make sure that we are never those targets.
I've heard, seems like I read that Georgia was like number three in the country for the amount of tax fraud in that way?
Actually, online. It was identity theft
that we are one of
the highest targets, and that's what's made the challenges at the department that much more daunting. What? Every dollar that might be sneaked out the door by someone filing a fraudulent return becomes the liability for all the rest of the taxpayers in the state.
And if we're number three in identity theft, that would mean the Department of Revenue would be pretty high on the list, I'm guessing.
The good news is that we've got great systems in place to protect our taxpayers. We have state-of-the-art software systems that perform analytics on tax returns, and we use the highest level of scrutiny with our personnel, as well as these analytics, to validate what is presented to us.
Do we use this? Are we using the same methodology and the same procedures that other states are using, IRS is using, or is ours a separate animal? Is it a better animal? How did this all evolve?
Well, as the number of incidents continued to escalate, attempts to defraud tax services across the nation, we gathered together and realized that there was strength in joined forces, if you will.
Right.
So we share episodes and information amongst the states across the nation, as well as the IRS and our tax software systems vendors. They recognize that they have a role in this to make sure that someone who uses their tax preparation software, it can count on their being protected as well. So collectively, we do share what experiences that we encounter and put up our common defense.
How many incidences of tax fraud, not tax fraud, but that's a different question, but identity theft-related issues do y'all encounter, did you encounter last year?
Well, it varies year to year. So far in 2016, we have blocked over $50 million in fraudulent filing attempts in individual income tax alone. And those are the ones that we know of today. We anticipate, based on the backlog of returns that we are still reviewing, that there'll likely be more.
I see.
We've had higher and lower in past years, but knowing that we're not letting that money out the door is comfort for our taxpayers.
Well, how much of a burden is this on the taxpayers themselves? Used to, I haven't had one lately, but it'd take like 18 months before somebody could get a refund if they had an identity theft issue on their return.
Well, we live in a new normal, is what I'm trying to tell taxpayers now, that, you know, 2 years ago, when you filed an electronic return with the services, you were likely to get a refund within 10 business days at the latest. That's not going to happen anymore.
Right.
We are going to take every precaution we can to make sure that when a return is presented to us, that it is accurate and it is filed by that person who is presented to us. So we're going to use some new validation protocols that I'd be delighted to share with you today, that we're going to need assistance from the taxpayers themselves, as well as employers, to make sure that we're protecting everybody's interest.
Does the IRS notify us or notify you if they are questioning the identity and vice versa? Do you get notification from them, and does that tip you off? Is that one of the things that occurs in other states as well?
That is a resource. If a taxpayer has been victimized and has had their identity compromised, then yes, we will share between services with the taxpayer's permission. And generally, they are issued a special identification number and special filing protocols to protect themselves going forward. But we also have some suggestions that we would like our taxpayers today to start thinking about now to protect themselves in the future, and also to understand and manage their expectations going forward. First and foremost, we are on a campaign to educate all employers that have employees in the state of Georgia that we must have that W-2 information. And the law in the state now is that W-2 and payroll information for the preceding year has to be remitted to the Department of Revenue by January 31st of the following year. And that is consistent with the federal requirement that W-2 information must be submitted. In the past, we found that employers didn't realize that they were also liable to provide that to the states as well.
Really?
And therein lied quite a bit of a problem.
No, they didn't.
I didn't realize that.
I know a lot of them did not realize that.
So we are doing our very best, and today is no different, and we're grateful for this opportunity to enlighten employers that if their employees are not getting a refund, they might be the reason. And the compliance with the deadline for employee payroll information upload will give us that data point to validate a return presented to us against that withholding and gross payroll information that we get on those W-2 uploads.
Now, this might be an aside, but it hadn't been too many years ago that my understanding was that when the W-2s were filed with the Department of Revenue, they were in a box in a warehouse somewhere. And if you wanted any information off of it, lots of luck getting anybody to go find it.
Well, I've only been there for 19 months, so I can't speak to past experience, but our systems are now prepared to accept them in electronic format.
So you all have that now.
That is correct.
Okay.
And we absolutely critically rely on that, that one of the first matches that we will be doing when we are processing a tax return presented to us is to match it against that employment information and the earnings information.
So W-2, if W has not come in and a return has been filed, you're not going to release the refund.
That is correct.
And that may be one of a number of checks and balances, but that is certainly one of the.
Well, that's good. I mean, it hadn't been many years, you know, since I became aware that they weren't recorded anywhere.
And the frightening part of that is that the criminals figured that out.
Yeah.
And we were finding that was a vulnerability that they decided to capitalize on. And the IRS, as I said earlier, has recognized how much money it's cost them similarly. That returns were being processed before the W-2 information was received. And so, unfortunately, money might go out the door, and then a valid return is filed, and the taxpayers are left paying the bill.
Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, I'm glad to know. I did not realize, every time I've asked that question in the past, the answer has been no, we don't have the W-2 information.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very happy to be able to tell you something different.
Years. I've been asking it for 10 or 15 years.
At least 10 or 15 years. We don't know. We don't have it. Even the state withholding numbers. Yeah.
Right.
I've heard the same.
I'm very delighted to be able to share that is our new normal. But also with that, the new normal is that processing will take longer.
Well, that's going to be a new thing for the public because electronic filing has been sold for years as get your money quick, get your returns in so we can get your money back to it. And it takes a long time for all the public to recognize the problem and why it's going to take longer. So
exactly. And
y'all going to do any PR about that other than being on a radio show like this?
We've begun those efforts already. We are posting on our website and releasing press releases as we speak to anticipate a refund taking up to 90 days to be received next year. We want to set the expectations now that we're acting on behalf of the taxpayer to protect them. Those that have been victims of identity theft tell us the nightmare that they encounter reestablishing credit and identity. We never want to be at the department the reason why.
90 days. I don't know if I'll get that back in time to go on my vacation, you know.
We have some more recommendations for you.
She has other things.
Okay. Here we go.
I assume that if it takes 90 days, you are prepared to pay interest for the period of time that is in excess of whatever, 6 weeks or whatever.
Well, state statutes require us to pay interest 90 days after the deadline of filing. So we would not start paying interest on refunds that are due until sometime in July, and that's already been the standard. However, if we set a 90-day expectation, then we hope that folks will continue to be pleasantly surprised. If their return is accurate, if their employer sends us their W-2, and there's no other anomalies that would lead us to inquire further, then I'm sure that their processing will occur in significantly shorter a time.
Is that going to cause a problem inside the processing of returns for you?
No, I don't think so. Our systems and our people are already in place and gearing up to be prepared for this new flow. We struggled quite a bit in this past year because we were dealing real time with reports and new episodes of fraudulent schemes. We had phishing schemes. We had spoofing schemes. I didn't know some of these words until this past year.
New vocabulary.
Sadly, it is. Yeah. And all different ways the criminals are trying to take advantage of an unknowing taxpayer and exploit them and compromise them.
But the question I'm going to get, I don't know if IRS is using they may be using some of the same stuff, but it's very likely that their refund will be received sooner than the Georgia refund.
Actually, the commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service is also setting expectations differently. He has come out with some press releases as well to tell folks that processing will not occur as rapidly in the past for the same reason. When he's been asked why so much money has gone out the door, it's a difficult question to answer. So he's also realizing that it's his fiduciary responsibility to be very careful with the funds that we taxpayers at the federal level provide. the recommendation that we are offering to taxpayers and employees is to look at their withholdings now and modify the amount that's being withheld from their paycheck so they're not reliant on a refund. Right. Then they're not waiting to pay for their vacation. They've already had that money all year long.
Darn.
It also...
My savings account. There.
But it also greatly reduces the potential to be victimized. Why leave money in the state treasury at receiving no interest for it and then having to wait for it after the year end?
Well, that's true. That, unfortunately, is something a lot of people do, is really their only source of savings, unfortunately. But
in today's new normal, that's not a practical way to operate.
Need a new paradigm.
Agreed.
Well, psychologically, there are many people you need to change your habits.
Well, we thought that technology was going to provide ease and rapid service delivery in refund or tax processing. And in most cases, it does. If everything's right, if the return is presented to us accurately, and all other information is presented to us that corresponds, then a refund will likely go out in very short order.
Do you feel like that y'all are catching more people that are doing this, actually?
I would say yes.
Are you trying to?
I would say yes. Now, we are much more aware of the threat, so we're taking much greater protections and using more robust tools, if you will, to analyze, and of course new systems that we have enacted and implemented at the department that are specifically devised to provide that fraud review.
I think I like to find humor in almost everything, and I thought the funniest one I'd heard was when they found somebody that had done hundreds of fraudulent tax returns from prison. So, I mean, they're already in jail, so what are you going to do to them?
And sadly, that's
are you still finding that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And we have to be looking at that same problem, that not only can taxpayers be victimized by identity theft, but they can be victimized by a tax return preparer that Absolutely. Manipulates what information Oops. Is provided to them.
Now you're meddling.
Well, we certainly want to keep the distinction and reputation for integrity that the Society of CPAs holds, right. With that, sustained in our community. So those that don't perform according to the state laws, we want to make sure that we find them and stop them.
Have you been able to apprehend and really
yes.
Physically?
There have been some in the paper lately.
In recent times, in the past 6 months, unfortunately, we've had to seek and receive arrest warrants for preparers who have exploited their clients.
Do you have any, from your perspective, are there any warning signs that you would see that somebody might recognize if they're using somebody like that? Any way they might pick that up?
I think the quickest way to pick it up is if the preparer suggests you put something on a tax return that you don't have supporting documentation to validate. Anytime a preparer suggests that you get creative, that's a warning sign that you might be being asked to break the law.
Well, no, we're supposed to be creative, come up with ways of doing things. That's what people pay us to
except
do.
Except when complying with tax laws. That tends to be frowned upon by the courts.
You're stretching the word creativity, I think.
Don't meet your tax preparer in the back of a pickup behind Kroger. That's the best advice and a warning sign that you could get
buyer beware.
That's right.
Always know the people you're working with and do your a little bit of research and homework.
That brings up a question for me. Those listeners who may have just joined us, we're talking with Lynn Riley, Georgia Department of Revenue, State Revenue Commissioner. What are some things you can do? This sounds like the state is protecting us, but what can we do personally to protect ourselves, perhaps go above and beyond just our due diligence?
Well, most important is to know who you're working with. Yeah. If you're going to deal with a tax professional, check the credentials. The Society of CPAs, as I said earlier, has a high regard of integrity and distinction. Mm-hmm. I think you can't go wrong when you hire a member.
So then you check with the Georgia Society of CPAs and you guys vet those.
Call us.
Yeah, right.
Two of us, right?
Well,
yes, call us.
You have to do a certain number of things to be a member to start with. But Anyway, toward that, we were having a conversation yesterday about Georgia having its own licensing regimen. That's been in the news lately, and I don't know if you care to comment on that or if you have any idea whether anything like that would assist or help deter inappropriate activity.
There has been conversation about expanding licensing requirements for tax preparers. I'm not sure where that conversation might go. Again, the society and CPAs already are held accountable by their profession and by their professional standards. Whether there is an appetite for expansion, I'm not seeing it at this point. The Internal Revenue Service tried to put a program in place a few years ago, which was found by the courts to be...
Well, that violated some old law, but the question for me is if something is really going to be a benefit, then generally I'm going to be for it. But if it's just more regulation for the sake of saying we've got a license in Georgia, then I don't see a benefit there. And I think the feeling of most of the people that I've had occasion to have conversation with didn't see that added any actual additional protection for taxpayers.
I would always recommend folks to know who you're working with, whether it is a professional in any field. Unfortunately, we hear too frequently of exploitation by many who we believed were in high regard, but whatever licensing they may have had really did not indicate their integrity.
Well, it's always something to be aware of, and I'm interested myself in what people can do that are signals that they might get. I mean, you know, meeting somebody in the parking lot in the back of a pickup truck might give you cause for concern, but
and unfortunately, the department has to rely on experiences that are encountered by our taxpayers. We do rely on folks calling us and telling us when they've had a poor experience. We want to hear about that because we do want to help protect a taxpayer, and our Office of Special Investigations will be happy to look a little deeper.
Is there a hotline for that?
Yes, we have a fraud hotline that's on our main page of our website, and we encourage folks, please, at any time to reach out to us. It is anonymous, but we want to hear about it.
One of the things that's come up is the IRS is planning to start using third-party collectors. And heretofore, if somebody calls me and says, hey, I got a call from somebody who says that I've got taxes due, and if I don't pay, I'm going to jail. And I said, well, the IRS doesn't make calls like that. But now they're going to start having third-party collectors. So that's a conversation that's going on. Does Georgia use third-party collectors? Tried to do that, I think, in the past.
At the moment, we do not.
Okay.
You will hear from the Department of Revenue first by a letter, although we are expanding our electronic communications, and I'm glad you led me in that direction because it was another point I wanted to make. Our Georgia Tax Center section of our website allows taxpayers to register, and we would like every person who interacts with the Department of Revenue to register on the Georgia Tax Center and also register to be notified when a return has been filed on their Social Security number. That's another way to protect yourself, because immediately if you receive a notification that a return has been filed and it wasn't you, we can lock that down immediately by letting us know. And we're going to expand our ability to interact with our taxpayers via this secure portal using two-factor authentication and other means, so that a taxpayer could interact with us electronically via email through our portal and know that it's us that they're dealing with.
Does Georgia ever, and this is like the IRS, because I, like John, I have lots of clients who get phone calls. Mm. Does Georgia ever make phone calls directly to taxpayers?
Only in response to inquiries that have been asked of us. You know, the department may reach out if they are pursuing a collection effort, but it would be personnel from the department. It would not be third party. And there would be some questions that would be asked to ensure that the department is speaking to the appropriate taxpayer before any additional information would be shared.
And every taxpayer could use the Georgia Tax Center, not just businesses.
That is correct.
And I don't think there's a lot of perception that that it's even there or that an individual could or would or want to use it.
Also part of our marketing and messaging that we're trying to expand upon. Not only can you sign in to be notified if a return has been presented on your Social Security, but you can electronically download that 1099-G form that tells how much your refund was last year, that if you are one that must report it in the subsequent year as part of your earnings.
Right.
Let me ask you a question about, I've asked you this before, actually. I'm asking again because I do get this question. I assume, and I assume it is cheaper for you to honor direct deposit of refunds versus sending out checks or debit cards or whatever, gift certificates, whatever people are sending out these days.
It's about a third the cost to process an electronic action with the department than it would be for paper.
So what do I do get this very frequently. As you know, and I don't know, but 4 years ago, 5 years ago, there was an unfortunate incident where I think the Georgia Department of Revenue actually invaded various individual taxpayers' accounts, took money. I don't remember all the details. It's a horrible situation. So I get feedback from clients, and they always tell me, not always, but I'm going to say 90% of them tell me, I don't want direct deposit. I don't want to give them my routing number. I don't want to give them my account number. I don't trust them. How do you respond? How should I respond to them?
I would indicate to them that working electronically with the department is probably more secure than putting a check in the mail. That check could go anywhere, and then anybody could have their routing number and bank account number. Something that is on a secure portal that is encrypted and protected is likely a safer transaction. Plus, more quickly, you will get a direct generally the next day from the time that we issue that payment. A check may take a week or two before it gets to you.
Okay. Well, it's still
try that.
A kind of an accident. I think my recollection of that was somebody made a mistake and sent out a bunch of refunds electronically that shouldn't have been sent and then tried to recall them. And
I believe your recollection is accurate, and the department clearly recognizes that that would not be something that they would ever attempt again, certainly not without clear notification to any impacted taxpayer before any action like that would occur.
Well, I think I would put that in the category of an honest mistake, but you do worry about those things, those kind of things happening that shouldn't. So I share the same I share the same reservation about putting things like that on anybody's electronic system.
I mean, I've thought of it myself, to be very honest with you, especially, but...
But we live in a very electronic and mobile platform. You see the phone sitting in front of me, and we've got a young gentleman here in the room today with me that probably has never done anything financially other than on a electronic device. Our next generations will probably not touch paper very much at all. So we are gearing all of our technology towards those folks that are going to want versatility.
Now, he's not that young. He does know what a floppy disk is.
That's true. That's true.
Are all the identity theft incidences, these are all electronic. Are there still paper, fraudulent returns?
You ask a good question. I don't have a quick answer for that, whether we've had paper returns presented to us that were fraudulent. The likelihood is yes. But the predominant amount is electronic. And if you stop and think about it, and I don't think I'm telling secrets, the criminals know this, that an electronic submission has a diff paper trail, if you will, or electronic trail, that likely will traverse multiple nations and be very, very difficult for anyone to pursue.
Are y'all having difficulty getting that information from countries where you need information from there?
It's difficult with different national laws and whether there's reciprocity among the nations. The desire for those of us in the department is not to have to pursue that expense to try to chase money that was fraudulently claimed and received. We'd prefer to put the defenses up at the forefront and never let that money out the door.
Do y'all have those kind of problems with other taxes other than just income tax?
We do. Certainly not to the same level. Income tax seems to be that focus point, if you will, of the criminal activity that we're encountering nationwide.
Well, now that we have covered a lot on identity theft and things of that nature, what else do the taxpayers need to know about that they may not know about?
Well, then I want them primarily to know that we've got their interests at heart at all times and that we will do what we can to make sure that we process refunds or any interactions they have with us as quickly as possible. But there's a lot of other things that we do at the department.
Well, you know, interest is something that we were talking about. Maybe we're off the air, but taxpayers may not know that the interest rate actually is down for Department of Revenue.
That is
issues.
True. The General Assembly made some changes in this current legislative session that reduced the interest rate on over and underpayments going forward after July 1st to the prime rate plus 3%. Historically, the rate was set back in 1980 to be 1% per month, which equated to 12% per annum. And nowhere can you find a return like that unless you have found a very aggressive investment someplace. So that it needed to be corrected and brought into a 21st century financial reality.
You know, I looked at a return last year and I said, how could they get that much interest? And I looked back, well, it was a net operating loss carry back and they got 12% for like 3 years. And so
I can actually tell you, I was going to comment earlier because we were talking about interest and being prepared to pay interest if necessary. And there have been many discussions I've had with people on trying to figure out ways of taking advantage of a 12% interest rate for the same thing John's saying, because you can't
beat that out in the market.
And I can tell you, we had come up with some very,
there's some very creativity,
creative.
You're talking about.
No, I mean actually things that would work, and I don't know if we tried them, but obviously that has now gone and passed. But the 12% return was, I understand the income was rather handsome, but paying out 12% interest is just.
People did that now before the IRS changed theirs, which they did several years ago. Then the interest rate the IRS was paying was, I think, like 20% or something. I forget the top rate, but people were overpaying and getting refunds left and right because it was the best game in town. And then they quit and they changed the rates.
We had actually thought of filing a return, duplicating somebody's wages, so you're going to come up with a lot of tax. You'd have a large balance due, pay the tax, let it sit there, and then wait 3 years, file an amended return. And
the state of Georgia still has laws on its books that would prohibit frivolous return filing. So I wouldn't advocate for
something like that.
What kind of pickup truck you got, Joel?
What kind of outfit you running over there, Joel?
Sometimes things get picked
up
twice.
But fully within the laws of the state, you're correct that folks were entitled to interest at that rate. The General Assembly recognized that we were not up to the times and that it was time to correct that in such a way that made it more similar.
How do you think, I know it's not long enough a period of time, but how do you think that's going to play out? This is going to be a revenue loser, a net revenue loser?
It was a relatively break-even position, even at the 12% rate, because, of course, the department has to pay interest on underpayments or overpayments. So for the state, it was break-even. The reality is that 12% is just not equivalent to what anyone else might be paying.
Right.
And so it was
really
well timed. It was well timed. But there's a lot of other things we do at the department, too.
What do y'all do that?
Do other stuff?
Many folks don't realize the unclaimed property that we administer. And
that's a good point.
We'd very much like folks to take a moment and come to our website and go to the unclaimed property section and do a search.
There's a link right on the
homepage.
Yep.
The state are fiduciaries of all properties that has, for whatever reason, not stayed with its rightful owner, or in the event of a loved one passing, the beneficiaries and heirs may not be aware of certain assets that might now be theirs. Mm-hmm. So fiduciaries, whether they are banks, investment firms, insurance companies, and the like, when after a certain period of time passes and they have not been able to put that asset with the rightful owner, they must, by law, turn it over to the states. And the states must hold it until we put it with their rightful owner.
Where do you hold these items?
Well, the cash and securities will be held in investment accounts, but we actually have a vault at one of our facilities. You've heard of it?
No, I was just imagining, though, this vault.
Well,
I thought you wanted the address.
Please don't let your imagination run wild. One of the first things I asked about when I first was given this privilege was, I want to see the vault.
Yeah.
I really want to see the vault.
Exciting to see what's in there.
And it was kind of a disappointment. Uh-huh. It's more document than anything else. We have actually some contents of safe deposit boxes that have been left with us. And most of that is either historical documentation or some family heirloom. We held on to somebody's baby teeth for a very, very long time.
Mm. Well, you're really destroying my interest in becoming the revenue commissioner.
Well, I was going to ask, what do you like about your job the most? What brings you passion on a daily basis?
The interaction with people and the fact that something new will happen every day. Mm-hmm. The General Assembly passes a significant number of laws that have to do with the things that we administer here in the state. Because not only do we do tax, income, corporate sales, and the like, but we are administered the alcohol and tobacco laws of the state and motor fuel taxes. We do unclaimed property management. We oversee the local governments and their real property valuation and the administration of the taxing that they do at the local level. And also, we operate the Department of Motor Vehicles. So we are issuing 9 million registration renewals every year in the state of Georgia, and we have over 300 different tag designs that we offer.
300?
I didn't know
over
that.
Over 300.
Really? Who are making the designs?
Well, generally they are brought to us by folks that would like to generate revenue. And to do that, the General Assembly has to pass a law that allows the partnership, if you will, with an organization, nonprofit, that would like to raise money through the sale of a specifically designed
tag. So y'all are paying the designer something.
Do we pay? Does the taxpayers pay that?
They pay an additional fee for the luxury of owning a specific tag that benefits an organization. I know if you drive around today.
Tag, you got to...
Correct.
You pay extra.
If you want a tag that's different than our two standard formats, one with the peach design in the center of the plate and the other with the pasture. Those come for a standard fee. Any plate that is different is paid a premium for. And in many cases, that premium is shared between the cost to produce is paid to the state, and the difference through a contractual relationship with the beneficiary goes to provide benefits for that organization.
So if I want a special that's not a common one, how would I know that it was there or even be able to buy it?
Please visit our website. We have pictures of every tag that's offered. We have many designs for our veterans that we honor here in the state of Georgia. And those come free to veterans that are eligible.
Well, that wasn't always the case.
That is correct.
Just until last year, the lawmakers, I have a Purple Heart license plate. I had to pay $45 year to renew.
So you get hurt after you get it too, right?
Yes, right. Up until last year, lawmakers decided, hey, this is something we want our veterans to have. So now I pay $5. This past year. So I thank you for pushing and recognizing that for not just myself, but all the other.
You thank the members of the General Assembly. I'm merely an administrator that is delighted to offer that to our veterans.
Right. And there's so many others out there that you see. And it's great to see other veterans driving around and they have their Army plate or their Navy plate. So they're everywhere out there.
And so pay a little bit closer attention when you're out driving. You'll see some of these 300 different designs.
I see some and I say, what is that? But I didn't realize they had that anything like that many. But on the tag department, we were talking about this before we went on the air. What is the issue with getting a tag transferred from one state to another, when you're moving to Georgia for assisted living purposes and you want to transfer your vehicle, but you're really not able to get out and run around like you used to?
Well, similar to the challenges we have with identity theft for income tax, we have unfortunate experiences with title fraud. So the department has to take identity and ownership of vehicles as seriously as we do income tax refunds. So what may seem a little prohibitive when the department asks for identity verification and documentation is to protect the vehicle owner. We unfortunately see too many episodes where someone will come in with fraudulently prepared credentials and try to title and,
really?
And get a title issued in the state. And we want to protect those folks just as much as we do our tax return filers.
You see a lot of that. I wasn't aware of that.
Sadly, yes. And the department is empowered with that same oversight to administer, to make sure that titles are issued honestly and that our Office of Special Investigations will pursue incidents of title fraud. And sadly, we've encountered them entirely too often. Odometer tampering is another area where our special investigators will pursue. And something, both those circumstances, we would very much like folks to use our fraud tip line for that as well.
I see. That too. Okay.
I've had problems in the past, and this is a while ago, similar to John, but also registering vehicles under the name of a company or an LLC. Are those things that are those relatively easy to accomplish, or is that?
Similarly, just the correct documentation is required. If the vehicle is going to be held in a corporate name, then the vehicle has to be purchased under that corporate name. And there has to be some paper trail that will verify that for us to issue a title, a tag, and an annual decal when you have to register. And finally, we at the department are also required to make sure that that vehicle is insured. We're responsible to notify folks if the insurance company tells us your vehicle insurance has lapsed, because at that point, your registration is no longer valid as well. And we'd be looking for you to reinstate that and stay in good course on the roads of the state.
With that in mind, if the insurance lapses, does that automatically cancel or terminate your registration?
The insurance company will notify us, and there's a grace period for which you can pay the fine, reinstate your insurance, prove to us that your insurance has been reinstated. And then, no, there will not be a lapse in your registration.
If it lapsed, then you'd have a problem selling the vehicle.
You'd not only that, but you'd encounter some penalties when you came back to re-register.
Okay.
It's more complicated than you might think. But again, that's all in the interest of protecting our taxpayers across the state and our motor vehicle operators. There's been too many episodes of uninsured motorist casualties on our roads and highways, and the General Assembly wanted to make sure that there was due diligence performed in making sure that the vehicles that we register are insured as well.
Well, that's interesting.
This is just a personal opinion question, because I know it's not your job really to enforce, you know, personal preferences, but what do you see, or what's your feeling like down the road in terms of income taxes, consumption taxes, corporate taxes? Do you think that things will change with talking about the rate going down, the income tax rate going down, talking about taxing more products, more services maybe, and the revenues from being, you know, spread out into different arenas? What's your feeling about that, just based on experience and what you've known and you hear?
From my time in the General Assembly, it was brought up every year to look at some type of tax reform. I don't think that's going to change. I think there's always going to be an appetite to look at what might be a better dynamic. But I will say the governor has been very clear that the state of Georgia gets a AAA rating because we have a very diverse revenue portfolio. And I think if you look globally, you'll see that governments that are in good financial position are generally have a very diverse tax base.
That's important. Do you have trouble administering the taxation between the different counties and municipalities where the state is doing the collecting? I guess in a variety of places, but how much time and energy does that take, and how much problem is that?
Well, it takes a great deal of time and energy to administer the sales tax distribution. The state of Georgia collects all of the sales taxes, and then our obligation is to disperse it out to the jurisdictions to which it is due. As you both gentlemen know, that we are a voluntary compliance state, so we will distribute that sales tax based on how it's reported to us. So if a merchant reports inaccurately, then we would not, unless audits are performed, know that it might not be going to the appropriate jurisdiction. And so we have an excellent team of auditors and compliance professionals at the department that do that scrutiny to try to help ensure that those sales tax revenues that are remitted to us are accurately reflected, so that then we can remit it to the appropriate local jurisdiction.
So if the county had some issue or complaint or problem or thought they weren't getting enough money, they would talk to you and then the Department of Revenue would do the audit or whatever?
Again, we would rely on someone to point us in a direction where they thought an inaccuracy occurred.
Right.
We would then point our attention in that direction and review it.
The local authorities do not audit the sales tax return.
No, that is correct.
Okay.
That is a function and responsibility of the department.
I see. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Well, our goal is to get it right.
And well, having
fun is
what
it's
all about, right?
Yeah.
Are you being able, just one last question.
Sure.
We have a lot of returns, individual returns that claim credits, out-of-state credits, film credits, scholarship credits, driving education credits. Not like in the past, we're not attaching certificates and that sort of thing. I will say for the most part, in the past, I'm going back a number of years, we would get many notices asking support for those credits. We get very few. Do you internally have the capability of verifying all these credits? Because I've heard situations where people do get notices, but for the most part, I don't see them.
Well, we put in a new credit manager module to our tax software, and our Georgia Tax Center has also now been programmed to accept uploads from taxpayers for any documentation that's required. So some of our credits, particularly those that are transferable or negotiable, there is a additional level of reporting that will be required electronically through our Georgia Tax Center so that we can track accurately the utilization of any tax credit that's presented to us.
Okay.
Well, is there any of the new laws that have been passed that you think are of particular note or that the public ought to be aware of?
Actually, yes. Thank you for that question. During the 2016 session, a rural hospital tax credit program was adopted, and we are in the final stages of preparing to accept applications for pre-qualification for tax credits starting January of 2017. This is an initiative that will allow $50 million of credits to donors in the state of Georgia who provide donations to qualified rural hospitals across the state as a way to help keep the doors open in the rural areas and provide some of those health services that are so desperately needed in other more rural parts of the state.
So I haven't read that. I hadn't read that bill. So the idea is you make the contribution and then you just have to have a receipt like that. And
that's
then you
correct.
Claim that as a credit. Or
there'll be a whole protocol to follow through our Georgia Tax Center where you would apply for it electronically. Once qualified and the donation is made and acknowledged by the recipient hospital, that credit would be shown on your account to be claimed on a future filing.
Just like a W-2.
Similar.
Yeah.
The other big thing to be watching for in November is a referendum if you are a resident or a voter in either the city of Atlanta or Fulton County, where we are going to enter into the area of partial penny sales tax should these referendums prevail. A half a penny sales tax referendum is on the ballot for MARTA within the city of Atlanta. 4/10 of a penny referendum within the city of Atlanta for transportation purposes, and 3/4 of a penny in the remainder of Fulton County outside the city of Atlanta for transportation purposes. So this will be something that we will be marketing after the results of the referendum to our merchants, because with successful votes on these three different referenda, the merchants will need to reprogram their systems to calculate these partial pennies on qualified purchases.
And these are popularly known as the SPLOST.
T-SPLOST and MARTA.
Okay. And MARTA, okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that everybody knows to look for that.
Yes, watch for it on your ballots. Make a good decision when it's presented to you in November.
And you obviously are not taking a position on pro or con.
All I'm asking is people take the time to get educated on it, and then pending the results, the department will proceed accordingly to make sure that we can implement accurately.
Toward that end, where's the best place to find information about that?
The referenda and ballot referenda is at the Secretary of State's website. There are multiple questions on the ballot on November 8th, and in some jurisdictions even more if they're having local bond package referenda.
The reason I ask is their phrase sometimes where you read it and say, what are they talking about? And so if people want to listen or look at it so they know before they go vote.
Correct. And it's already published. I've seen it on the Secretary of State's website already.
Okay.
And a website for you and your department if listeners want to find out more?
dor.ga.gov.
Lots of information there. You guys are doing good things, looking out for us here in the state of Georgia. So we appreciate all your efforts there. Please come back and be a guest on the program anytime. We love to talk more. We could have kept going here, guys. You know that, right?
Well, it's lunchtime.
Yeah, right. Somebody's got to eat here today.
But
yeah. So thank you, Lynn Riley, for joining us. And thank you, John and Joel. Tell the listeners again about the Georgia Society of CPAs and how they can find out more information about that.
Well, we've got an extensive website as well. Feel free to go on there. There's a plethora of information. We disseminate lots of technical information. There's lots of courses being offered. www.gscpa.org.
Org. Yeah.
There you have it.
And you can find out about Joel by checking the nearest pickup truck in the back of the Kroger parking lot.
Right in the parking lot after the broadcast.
Well, that's good, right? Yeah. Know interested. Who you're working with.
They have a website, Jones and Cobb, CPA.
Thank you.
Yes.
And John, yours is johnmasterscpa.com.
Very good. Well, I'm sure you guys will be back in the studio again before too long with another fabulous guest. So thank you for making this show happen today. Thank you to Stone Payton and Lee Cantor. And on behalf of the entire Business Radio X Network, I'm Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We'll see you on the radio.